Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This episode of Believe is brought to you by Cryptid Coffee Co. Use promo code BELIEVE on checkout for 10% off their Angry Yowie coffee blend. Head over to cryptid.com.au to check them out.
It was just the most massive thing I've ever seen. To tell you the honest truth, I thought, well, we're the only ones left on this planet. Something's happened. We've missed something here.
The fear that went in me when I seen it was just the feeling, I'd say it was fear, but I've never felt that feeling before in my entire life.
It's a weird feeling, like you can't explain it when you don't know. You feel like you're being followed, but you don't know what it is.
We had two to our right, another one in front of us, another one to the left, and another one just across the road, shaking the daylight out of the tree. All we get was a big red eye.
I remember waking up and looking at the end of the bed, and there was a figure there, almost insect-like, and then I blacked out.
Welcome to the show, everyone. My name is Cade Moyer, and you are listening to the Believe Paranormal and UFO Podcast. If you have had an encounter and would like to share it, please get in touch with me. My email address is believepod@gmail.com. If you enjoy the podcast, be sure to leave us a rating or review wherever you listen and head on over to our website, believepod.com, and consider becoming a member to get bonus episodes and video content. Tonight, I'm joined by Rod, and Rod is technically a returning guest to the podcast because he actually called up for one of our, I believe, the Night Shift live call-in shows with a very, very fascinating Yowie encounter, and I could not let Rod just kind of disappear into the night, so I got him back, and he's come on to share the incredible Yowie encounter he had in the Pilliga. So, Rod, welcome back to the show.
Beauty, thanks, Cade, and absolute pleasure to be here, mate.
Mate, it's fantastic to have you here. When you called in on the live show, it was bloody incredible, the stories that you were telling, and you're really a man of many tales, to kind of put it lightly, because you've actually called into the live show a couple times now, each with a kind of a fascinating tale to go along with it. But tonight we're going down the path of the Yowie, and mate, where did this really all start for you? Because I guess there's usually a pivotal moment in someone's life where they go, you know what, I'm interested in the Yowie. So where did that start for you?
Oh, mate, started at a very young age, basically still at school. Pictures of the Paddy film. And, mate, being a young fella, you just put it into little boxes and you stow it away in the memory. And, so at a very young age. And then those two young fellas up at Kilcoy, up at Sandy Creek there, you know, which started the whole statue in Kilcoy and their, their encounter there. So, very interested in that. So, as I said, always had an interest knew the existence of Bigfoot, and then that pivotal moment. Those boys, they made the newspaper up here on the Darling. Well, I was in Toowoomba at the time, and certainly made the paper there. And, we've got these things in Australia as well. So, that's where my interest all started. Always been a keen outdoorsman. Had the opportunity to do a lot of hunting up in the Brisbane Valley in the Kilcoy area and just a little bit north. And cut a long story short, spent 10 good years up there hunting up in the Brisbane Valley, typical Yowie country. My first question to the property owner was, son, have you ever seen a Yowie? And he was quite adamant, and he spent his entire life in the district, and never once did he have that feeling, so that he was being watched or heard anything unusual. But a lot of AYR encounters up there, you know, some in the distant past, some very, very recent. And, I'd been through all that area. As I said, did a lot of hunting up there, and I never felt, even the burnings, you know, never felt at ease at all. It was interesting, but in my thought, it comes down to location, 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 and timing. So, but probably more location. The next part of my journey was an encounter down at my mate's property. Because it's ongoing, I can't give too much away about it. But very interesting. It's been gone, well, the encounters there have been probably over the last 4 years. The last going on was probably, gee whiz, February last year.
So you say there's an active investigation from your team on that property involving a Yowie?
Well, myself. Because it's a hunting property, and I haven't had my team down there, so... I tell you what, you call it team, and that's pretty formal, you know. We're just a bit of knock-around guys who enjoy each other's company, and put it down to being we all enjoy being out bush, and if something strange happens all the good, you know. But it's just a enjoyment of the Australian bush, and once you become aware of what's out there, you can everything falls into place. Just recently, you know, you hear talk of Australian Yowies being so aggressive as compared to American Bigfoot. I think they're like people, which I'll go into later. But I think you can strike anyone on a bad day. So that's my theory. As I said, the last ongoing down on the property was very, very interesting. For all the listeners. We caught on trail camera. Unfortunately, I never got to sight the pictures, but these pictures were snapped way out in the back blocks, and 2:30 in the morning, and property owner, he didn't own the camera, but the guy, he saw the camera and the film, and he said, big hairy arm, fingers attached.
Really?
And, yes. And the other photo showed two entities. So a little bit grainy, a little bit foggy, but he was quite adamant. And the placement of the camera was actually near a dam, and the naming of the dam went from the Reed Dam. It is now called by the guy who owns the trail camera, who apparently doesn't believe in Yowies. It's now called Yowie Dam. So I find that very, very interesting. So as I said, it's still ongoing there. So that was my basically my first encounter with Yowies.
And I have to ask before we go on, because I know I'm going to get absolutely blasted by the listeners if I don't. What happened to the picture?
It was put onto a business laptop, That's where my mate sighted them, and apparently he deleted them. So, yeah, the owner of the photos. Now, I find that very hard to believe as well. Also, when he's actually saying that he's referring to the dam, Yowie Dam. But, yeah, talking to my mate, he said, yeah, he was definitely a non-believer. And I have no idea why, if he did, and why he did, if he did do it. So I don't know.
I wonder if it was like if you said it was kind of like a work laptop. Usually, if he's working for, potentially, if this individual is working for a larger company, they usually turn over those laptops rather frequently. And it could have just been a genuine case of, hey, I turned the laptop in and I didn't realise this picture was on it, and now it's gone forever.
Possibly, but I don't think so. Only small business.
Yeah, right. So you think he's still got it, don't you?
Well, I don't know. I don't. it's like Yowie's, mate. Conjecture. I don't know. Unfortunately, as I said, I wasn't privy to the photos. All I can go by is what my mate said he saw on the laptop. So, yeah, very, very interesting. Mate, if you like, I'll shoot you some of my occurrences down there. And, actually, if you see one of the photos, you'll see that handprint on the side of a green caravan.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's dive into that, because you've had some pretty fascinating encounters in the Pelagar, and you've got actual photo evidence of some of the encounters that you've had here, which I think is really, really fantastic. So for anyone listening to this episode, if you jump into the show notes, you'll find a link to this episode on our website, and you'll be able to view all the images on there.
Okay, so, we'll jump into the Pelagar, because, as I said, we've got a great mix of guys and girls, and absolutely fantastic people. No one else I'd rather be in the bush with, you know? We just have an absolute ball of a time, and they range from hardcore, like Bob, absolute hardcore Yowie chaser. I don't like the term Yowie hunter, you know, but I think sometimes they're hunting us. I like the term Yowie chaser. I don't consider myself a researcher or an investigator. I just like being out in the scrub, you know. But, okay, so how it all started. Joined a Facebook group. Well, Bob put up a... anyone interested in having a look for Yowies. So, contacted him straight away, and we all got together down at Witherin, down at Sharp Park, and had a great weekend down there, or an overnighter. Got to meet everyone, and it sort of blossomed from there. So, did a lot of research. You can't call it research. We spent a lot of time in the scrub down there at Witherin. And, met some fantastic people. And then one night we were down there, and we were sitting around, and the topic came up about, well, we were having a lot of stuff happening down at Witherin. But we said, where would we go to have a Yowie encounter and possibly see one? And, well, instantly the Pelagar came to mind. So it didn't take too long, actually, probably 6 months of planning. And we ended up with five of us down there. There was Bob. Bob and his girlfriend at the time, Pan. Myself and my skeptic wife, Karen. And Steve, who's a first responder. So, all very good. So we planned a week down there, including travelling time, so about an 8-hour run down for most of us. And we rolled in. Bob and Pa got there first. They're actually in a big transit camper van, certainly had its advantages and disadvantages. We rolled in, set up camp. Karen being the skeptic, that made it very interesting. Being first responder, a lot of common sense, and on the skeptical side. And, mate, I love skeptics and I love their reactions, you know. So all good. Now, we set up camp. And now this is at Salt Caves at the Pilliga. I had no problems whatsoever stating exactly where we were. And, we were at the campgrounds just north of the fire tower. Anyone who's been down there, they'll know exactly what I'm talking about. Now, the area was chosen mainly because of the day area with water, as well as the Salt Cave Dam, which is probably about a kilometre to the north. The timing of the trip. Okay, early May 2021. Well, we all know what happened then. That was the lunar eclipse and the blood moon. So just fell into place nicely. Thought we'd take advantage of that with the low light area there through the Pilliga and Kinabarabin. Set up camp. Another very important thing to take in is we did an emu pick around, picked up a little bit of kindling, and we basically knew what was on the ground around the campsite. So this will come into play in the next morning. Just on dark, got a nice campfire going. We had the gazebo, the camper trailer or camper van we were all very close together. And Steve had his double swag, you know, the hoop type, and that was right next to his van, but on the campfire side. And we had a bit of music going, all set up, all everything plugged in. Drinks were nice and cold, and we were all. This was fairly early in the night. I would say there might have only been an hour since sunset. Anyway, we were all sitting around the campfire. The walk from the campfire to the gazebo might have been 20 to 25 feet. Anyway, so Karen... Karen said, anyone want drinks? I'm going up to the gazebo. And she stood up and made her way to the gazebo, popped the lid on the esky. Because of the little bit of music playing and the banter around the campfire, Karen heard this creature walk in. And we didn't. So the first knowledge of this creature in camp was when Karen started yelling at us to come and have a look. And so by the time we took those half a dozen steps up there, the encounter was over. But my wife had sighted this creature. Now, I'll give you some thoughts on why she saw it, and I'll give you the description of the encounter. Now, thinking back on it, my wife, Karen, the weather was just starting to cool. There was probably a slight nip in the air. She was dressed in all black, and she had a fur hooded jacket on, and the hood was up over her head. And she was quite comfortable. I honestly believe that this creature had been watching us for a fair little while. And I just honestly believe that it was looking at Karen. And when Karen went up to the tent, it took an opportunity to get a real close look at her. Whether it... you know, just got confused or did it think Karen was another creature. There's only assumptions that one can make. So Karen's at the esky. She's heard it walk in. In her hand, she had a very cheap service station torch. So she's heard it walk in, and it had positioned itself behind a fairly scrubby tree. Karen looked up, and it was behind the tree. It swung out on its right-hand side and looked at Karen from about 20 to 25 feet away. I don't know who got the biggest fright. Karen automatically put the cheap torch up into its face, and it instantly threw its arm and elbow up and shielded its eyes. And then Karen sort of turned, started yelling at us, and then we came running. By the time she'd moved her head back, it had slipped back into the bush. Now, the description, physical description. Steve stands about 6'2". Next morning we had Steve up there, and a rough measurement of approximately 7 foot tall, all covered in hair, with the very, very dim torchlight in its eyes. It did reflect back red eye shine, definitely not glowing. It was reflection off the torch. Everyone was just over the moon. And there were so many questions flying. But I couldn't believe how stoic Karen was. I would have been, and I think most people at 25 feet, something 7 foot tall covered in hair, I think a lot of people would be maybe in the fetal position. But after the encounter, Karen and I did have a moment together, and I said a lot of people would have, and myself included, might have just crumbled with spotting this thing. And I said you seem to be taking it very, very well. Anyway, she said, I said, yeah, why? And she said, it looked so human, and it looked so curious. So for the first night, turning up at the Soul Caves and to have that happen, it had the makings of an unbelievable week down there. So that was our first night. As I said, everyone had a million questions. Something very, very special about that place. None of us were spooked. I think Karen's encounter, it almost like it had a sort of calming effect on us. But very interesting. Okay, so.
Well, I was actually going to ask that, because if that's the first night of the entire weekend that you're staying there, I would have thought the tension would have been quite high, and I'm amazed that you actually stuck around.
Yeah, it's interesting. The areas are interesting, and how people react is probably as interesting, you know. But there was no mention whatsoever of it was decided that if safety first. If there was an issue with safety, or we thought we were in over our heads, I only took one person to have any concerns, and we were out of there, you know. But it never came up. There was a few anxious moments, but again, I think we were all in awe of what was happening around us. You know, it was a very interesting study in how people react, you know. But I'll carry on, because it just it gets very, very interesting. If people get the opportunity to have a look at that hieroglyph, Now, next morning, we're up early and looking around that tree area, just to the east of that, but only a couple of steps. Here's this hieroglyph on the ground. I think Bob spotted it and called us all over. And, yeah, make of it what you will. But, yeah, this hieroglyph, it was drawn into the ground. If you notice carefully, in the centre of the hieroglyph, there's a stick. Now, on one end of the stick, there was moisture. I have no explanation on why it was wet, because the ground itself was very, very dry. I don't believe there was any substrata moisture there. So what the moisture, if it was moisture, whether it was an oily substance off its skin, again, it's only conjecture. I have no explanation of it. But, yeah, we all stood around this thing. Because it was so close to the camp, and yeah, we had a lot of theories floating around, but in the end, who knows? But yeah.
It is rather interesting, this picture, because it doesn't look like this would just be something that was kind of accidentally made by bugs or anything like that, or insects or anything like that. This is something with structure. It's done with purpose. And now, a quick word from our sponsor.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Also, are you wanting more content? Why not become a Believe Plus member? You'll get access to exclusive podcasts and episodes that aren't available to the public. Not only that, you'll also get our regular feed without any ads. Head to believepod.com/plus to sign up today for just $5 a month.
Yep, that's exactly right. Now, this also comes into play with what I said the night before. We'd been over that ground gathering up kindling and firewood. So if that was on the ground previous, we would have seen it without a doubt, because it was in, as you can see, it was in fairly open ground and very, very close to the campsite. We would have been over that area probably 6 or 7 times gathering up firewood. So, again, I believe it was done once everything had settled down, we'd all gone to bed, and it, for some reason, came in and threw that on the ground. I have no idea the whys or wherefores, but just another very interesting aspect of our trip down there. Okay, so we've had the encounter. We've got a hieroglyph on the ground. Our next plan of adventure was, it was decided, seeing that this creature possibly could be in the area, we decided, and I'm not really keen on gifting, but yeah, just the you know, you don't want to make them too friendly. So but yeah, we put an orange out the next night, and we did have a bit of fruit laying around as well, but yeah, had an orange very close, and so what happened that night? The orange was out, and yeah, I think the eclipse was later. So next morning, up early, orange gone. Quick scout around, found the orange peels in the scrub, and just to the south of the camp. From its positioning, it then looked like it decided to come in and have a real good look at us. And that comes into play with the handprints found on the back of Steve's Land Cruiser, which puts it very, very close to Steve, probably within 3 metres of him while he was sleeping there in his swag. And, very, very plainly visible where this thing had propped itself up there and quite content to be very, very close to us. But as I said, we're all in our swags or in the camper van or in our tent. We knew this thing definitely had an interest in us.
So how many days were you at this campsite for in total?
Well, we had the 1 day run in, 5 days there, and then the 1 day run out. So, we were basically in there probably 6 days.
Wow.
But as I said, I know Steve got a little bit nervous there one night, and he actually moved his swag under the gazebo, out from the Land Cruiser and under the gazebo. Things are starting to get a little bit strange. So discretion the better part of valor, and I certainly wouldn't want to be out there, even the tent. But I'll carry on with the next night. So we found these prints on the back of the car, and we knew that this thing had. Obviously, it was very curious of us. Okay, now, we had a fairly sophisticated camera setup. Bob set up and supplied the IR cameras. Now, I see people rolling their eyes on IR cameras. We had four IR cameras and a starlight camera. I had a couple of trail cameras that I'd positioned out. I've just got to think and get all the sequences right. Now, I reckon that night was the lunar eclipse. We were seated around the campfire, and now I had a clear shot to the west through the scrub, and I could basically see the horizon. Now this was before the eclipse had started, and lo and behold, out on the horizon, I'm looking at a yellowish light, and I'm thinking, is that a star? Because you can see stars right to the horizon out there. Anyway, so I called Bob over and I said, "Mate, what do you make out of this?" I said, "Can you see what I'm looking at through the scrub?" And he's looking, and we're both looking, and then and we'd probably watched it for probably 5 minutes, and it just launched to the south, and we both looked at each other and thought, this is really, really strange. From the salt caves, once you're up on the fire tower, you can basically only see two lights. They're both red. I suspect they're both airport lights, they'd have to be airport lights. They're bright red, maybe fire towers. The one at Narrabri, the one at Berradine. We saw something unusual in the sky, apart from the eclipse. Okay, so, very interesting. And so we're all seated around the campfire, and we're just having a good old natter. And Steve looks at me and he says, "Can you hear that?" And I said, "No, I'm not picking anything up." I said, then we both got up and we moved just away from everyone else yapping. And he said, "No, can you hear it now?" And I said, "No." And I said, what are you hearing? And he said, "It sounds like two people arguing in the bush." And I said, "How far out do you reckon?" He said, "Oh, might be 100, 120 metres out and to the west of us." Anyway, I don't think Bob could pick it up. But so Steve stayed there, and Bob and I went for a walk to the east of the camp. So we walked, I'd say maybe 80 metres. And we were just standing there in the dark. And all I can describe this vocalisation was it had absolutely huge lung capacity. It started very, very low and finished high. And it was no animal I'd ever heard out in the bush, definitely not deer. And you could rule everything else out, you know, because of the huge lung capacity. It was just incredible. Bob and I looked at each other and beat a hasty retreat back to the campfire. And, I'd never heard anything like it. Now, the description that Steve gave, someone arguing in the bush, that'll come into play later as well. So, took in the lunar eclipse, absolutely spectacular. And, okay, now...
So, I do have to ask, the UFO encounter that you had there, do you feel like that was related to any of the encounters that you're having here, or do you think that's just some happy-go-lucky type of event there?
Yeah, mate, yeah, it was just a side. We were just lucky to see it. I don't think it had anything to do with our Yowie encounter Yowie's encounter, because I can't see something arguing with itself in the bush, you know? And the speed that whatever this was covered to go from the west side of the camp and go to the east, and this thing I estimate was out probably 400 to 450 yards, but the volume was just incredible, and the amount of air, absolutely amazing. And as I said, I'd never heard anything like it.
I'd imagine the vibe in the camp is starting to change rather quickly when this is going on.
Well, yeah, yes and no. Everyone's still fairly level-headed. There was no major panic or anything like that. But it became very, very interesting. There seemed to be something. Well, yeah, hold on to your seatbelt after sunset. You know, there was very, very interesting. Okay, as I said, Bob did have a very, very good IR setup. And anyway, so Bob had a laptop monitor inside the van, and he called me in and he said, "What do you make of this?" Now, we had a bush edge, probably was 60 to 70 metres, and the defined edge, you know, scrub edge. And with the IR cameras on, again, at 7 foot, a set of eyes, standing on that bush edge. And I honestly think with the lighting and the IR cameras, that was the edge of its comfort zone. And I tell you what, you certainly get a chill up your spine when you're looking at a monitor and you know that this 7 foot creature is standing just north of the camp and taking in the view. And unless you were looking at the monitor, you were totally oblivious that you had a visitor. And but from that point onwards, it became a lot more gamer. It with our hub tent set up on the gazebo, it started to come into the edge of the camp, as I said, with on that bush edge. Now, the power supply for the cameras, we learned our lesson, it wasn't quite adequate, and the cameras would power down between 2:30 and 3 in the morning. And basically, when those cameras powered down, get through your VR, they could, well, that, I know in my own mind that, they can definitely see IR. And when these cameras powered down, you could hear the creature come into camp.
Oh, really?
Yep. And, okay, so...
That's cunning, isn't it?
Oh, well, it explains a lot of things.
It really shows that these creatures have quite a high level of intelligence to be able to recognize that whatever this is isn't functioning anymore.
Well, because the IR cameras are shedding IR light all the time, I think their eyes are that sensitive. You know, for it to throw its arm up with a half-worn servo torch and pretend, well, acted like it was blinding, you know, when Karen first spotted it that first night. And then for the IR cameras to be operational and it's standing out that 60 to 70 metres in the scrub line, and when the cameras power down, it comes in. Mate, the only, the logical conclusion is, yes, they can see IR. Yes, they have very, very sensitive eyes.
Yeah, so, it makes sense, doesn't it?
Oh, it certainly does. So, yeah, that's another lesson learned. But then, as I said earlier, you know, with that the last evidence on the mate's property, they got caught out at 2:30 in the morning. Obviously, they weren't expecting to walk in front of the trail camera.
Yeah, it's rather interesting, like how you hear some of these encounters where, because I'm very much like you, you know, I've spoken to enough people to be under the impression that these creatures can see some sort of infrared light. I don't know what it is, but they do seem to avoid those areas, and you kind of hear like when people put on infrared cameras or game trail cameras that the activity almost dries up on those properties. So it's interesting that sometimes that these things just kind of get caught out. And it goes back to a comment that you kind of said earlier, right at the start of this conversation there, Rod, of you know, you get these things on a bad day and you just don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, it's just, think of us when we kind of kick our toes. It's not like it's something that we kind of do all the time, but it's something that just kind of catches you out every now and then. And I guess that's my bad analogy of saying, you know, us kicking our toe is the same as a Yowie or a Bigfoot kind of getting its hand caught on an infrared camera before it realizes, oh, geez, what am I doing?
Yep, exactly. Exactly. Okay, so... as I said, with the power situation, this creature was coming in. Obviously, Steve had some shuffling around, positioned his swag under the gazebo. And, I probably got my biggest wake-up call. Karen and I, this was probably four, sure, five nights in, and I was sound asleep. And Karen's a fairly light sleeper, and the cameras are powered down, and I get an elbow in the ribs, and Karen goes, "Can you hear that?" And number one was the scent given off by it. It was like smelling salt. It woke me up very quickly. Now, I estimate that this thing couldn't have been any more than 2 to 3 metres from the side of our tent.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we could definitely hear it shuffling around. Their eyesight must be just incredible, you know, absolutely incredible. But it just wandered around within, went past our tent. We had a little bit of gear outside. You could hear it shuffling around it, having a good look. But now the smell. I believe encountered the smell before down at Witherin. Now this one, I don't think it was. I think there's two or three distinctive smells, depending on their heightened degree of being absolutely pissed off with someone. You know, if you were in their area, they want you out. It's completely different to the smell that we smelt at the Soul Caves. The smell we got there, and Karen's got a pretty sensitive nose as well, and it was like, oh, what? Can you explain it as 2 to 3 month old body sweat? It was just eye watering, you know, and I couldn't say I could smell any sort of fecal matter or anything like that, but it was just this overwhelming body odor. And it basically just wandering around the camp. Just curious, as Karen said, it just had a curious look in its eyes. So I ended up, once I heard it shuffling further away, I just fell back asleep, you know. And and then probably at sun up, it's just made its way out to what it considered a safe distance again, you know. I have no idea of what it considered a safe distance, in that experience, it only sounded like the one. But, you know, earlier on, it sounded like there was two in the area. So, I don't know. I have no idea. I have no conclusions to draw from that. But just the sheer curiosity of us being in that area.
Yeah, and you know, you do hear this quite a lot when it comes to, people camping, and especially the Pilliga. It just seems to be this incredible hotspot for Yowie encounters, and you know, rightfully so. It's kind of prime territory for these kind of creatures. But the thing that I do hear quite often is that you kind of get them in twos. There's never just the one there. So Dean Harrison from AYR, he's a very good friend of mine, and he basically swears by it that when you see one, there's not one far away.
Yep, exactly. But as I said, whether one was playing cockatoo and keeping a lookout, but I've often been asked by friends, you know, why didn't you unzip the tent and jump out with one of your good torches? Well, I just didn't want to see what sort of reaction it caused, you know? If it was reacting the way it did with a half-flat torch, we've all got some pretty good torches. Number one, because we're not allowed rifles, so it never had too much torch. But it never even entered my mind to slip out and try and hit it in a good torch. I just didn't have the faith in what reaction it would have caused.
And that's fair enough, you know. Like this is a wild creature, and you got to treat it like a wild creature. Australia doesn't really have any kind of major predators in the bush, and us Aussies really aren't accustomed to dealing with wildlife like that. You know, the most dangerous thing out there that we would probably run into might be, and it really depends on where you are. I'll use my location where I live in Cairns. You know, you could run into a cassowary, or you could run into a wild pig, or you'd run into a crocodile. And each of those have their own type of aggression towards you, and there's different ways to deal with it. But when it comes to something like this, it's just so unknown, and it's what do you do? And I think that you made the right decision. You know, you do nothing. You kind of pretend you're not there and let it move on its way.
Yep, exactly. Well, over that period, it had shown no aggression with what we were doing. So, we were basically just kept on that same path. Fully prepared, you know, if something stepped out, to have a good look. But, confronted, just my thoughts, probably not a wise move, you know. You would have seen some photos there of inside the Narrabri Hospital with the paintings.
Ah, yes.
Okay, so you'll see the owie depicted there. I don't know if anyone's been unfortunate enough to be into the Narrabri Hospital like I was, but I ended up with an overnight stay in there with kidney stones. So I went down in a screaming great heap. The timing of it, I've got a little bit wrong. Sorry, guys. I did make mention of the arguing in the bush and how that came into play. Now, Steve and Karen decided to go into Narrabri and resupply. Pa and Bob decided while they were there, they wanted to slip down to Hickey Falls and have a look at the location of that sighting. So I was left in camp by myself. Okay, so I'm sitting there and feeling quite comfortable, actually. And I heard a vehicle up at the day area. Heard that car door slam, or, you know, clink, you can hear everything in the bush, and we're not that far from the day area. And the track goes from the day area, and it's just west of our campsite. If you jump onto Google Earth, you can see all this. And this track runs up to Salt Cape Dam, which is very, very popular with the bird watchers. So I'm sitting there having a cup of tea, and I see the heads bobbing through the scrub and the big binoculars around their necks. And I thought, I'll catch up with these guys on the way when they come on their way back. And hopefully they'd be on that track, you know. Anyway, sure enough, a couple of hours later, I could hear them talking as they're coming up through the scrub, definitely not a yowie. And then I spotted their heads bobbing. Anyway, yelled out to them and they came up into the camp. Anyway, got talking. And I said, how'd you go? I said, obviously you guys are bird watchers. And they said, we saw a few down there, a few different species, but just the time of year, we didn't see as many as we thought. Anyway, they sort of cast their eyes over our campsite and they said, so you've been here a few days. What are you guys up to? And I said, we're chasing yowies. The old fella, so it was an old fella and his missus. Anyway, he had a bit of a smirk on his face. And, the typical non-believer, you know, which is fair enough. And I said, where are you guys camped? And they said, we're up at Dandry Gorge. And Steve had a bit of a connection with Dandry Gorge with Relly's. And I said, that's interesting. And I said, nice spot. And he said, absolutely beautiful. We're the only ones there. And I said, have you heard anything strange? Anyway, the old chap, he just started to say, mouth no. And his missus just glared at him. And she looked at him and said, well, you explain what we heard last night.
And I said, wow.
And I said, what did you hear? And she looked at me and she said, it sounded like someone arguing in the bush in the gorge just down.
No way.
Yep. And mate, I've struck that a few times with people's mindset. But she came out and she said, yeah, there was what she heard, she described as people arguing in the bush.
Unbelievable.
And I just gave sort of a bit of a nod and thanked them very much for their time and away they went back to Dandery Gorge. Now, Dandery Gorge, as the crow flies, is about 35 kilometres. So, I think if something, well, it's all speculation, isn't it? I don't know. Would they travel 35 k's in a night? Well, I know I was in the Red Deer Project up at Crashbrook Dam in my time, and a Red Deer stag, it'll travel 20 k's a night.
I reckon these creatures have the absolute possibility to do that. You know, you look at a normal man, and these things have potentially four, five, six times the stride length of us.
Yes, they do. That is dead right. I know that for a fact because we had one walk in on us at Witherin. Never sighted it, but six steps, and I reckon it easily covered 30 metres.
And, you put this thing at a jogging speed or even a running speed, that stride gets, 30% longer.
Oh, exactly. So, as I said, the locale of the salt caves, I think it's curiosity that drives or brings them there because it's a known camp spot. And now the other interesting thing, the only sign of life we saw our entire trip there, we saw it was at the height of the mouse break, so we saw some mice. We saw a bandicoot, and we saw two emus. At no stage did we see any marsupials whatsoever. So, unless you count the bandicoot, so food-wise, I'd dare say that there should be a lot more encounters, all creatures down around Dandery Gorge. That's only my opinion for what it's worth, So, I know we're getting a bit tight on time. But, as I said, I found that very interesting that they said and described it exactly the way Steve described it. Basically our trip's coming to an end then. And we packed up fairly well that night. And next morning did the emu pick around the area. And so all the gear's in the car, I'm doing a walk around and picking up any bits of paper or a bit of plastic or whatever. And I walk back to the vehicle and I'm surveying our camp area. Now, we did find some pretty ambiguous tracks, but For the visitations that this creature was doing during the week, I would have expected a lot more, but the penny never dropped until I was standing there looking ready to depart. And basically, every bit of scrub that it could have stood on to conceal its tracks, it did. Basically, our campsite was flattened. Absolutely flattened. And it... when that orange went missing, I believe it was standing on bits of timber or trees that had fallen. It's very hard to get your mind around how it would position itself and not leave tracks, but that's what it was doing. Any tufts of scrub or grass, they were all flattened. And, so that's what it was utilising to keep its presence seen on the ground to an absolute minimum. And as I said, we went, wow, what a great trip, and met more than our expectations. Karen, the biggest skeptic, had the sighting the first night, and we all experienced something very, very unique in the Australian bush. And that was our Pilliga trip.
Mate, your Pilliga trip is, I think, the dream trip for many a Yowie fan out there. And, you know, I'm truly envious of it because it seemed to be quite a action-packed trip. And, you know, it's not very often that you get a non-believer to basically have a face-to-face encounter with one of these things. And I can only imagine the paradigm shift that your wife had after that to go, well, yeah, I guess Rod is out here and he's actually doing something that matters now, because I think that gave you basically infinite cred to go out looking for these creatures for the rest of your life now, Rod. I think that's an absolute free pass for you. But I do have to ask you, mate, like, what do you, before I let you go tonight, like, what do you think the Yowie is?
Well, mate, I honestly believe that it's that close to humanity. It's one... Well, is it one step forward or one step back? Who knows? But very, very closely related. I can only go by what Karen said. You know, it looked so human. That's why she, it didn't worry her too much, you know? Interesting you say, when I first started looking into my mate's property, I said to Karen, look, give me a leave pass for 12 months. And now it's going on 4 years later.
There you go.
Now some other interesting stuff. Just quickly, another member of our group, Lee, she spoke to some Aboriginals from the area, and I don't know whether this one's ever been spoken about before, but she was, as I said, she was speaking to one of the Aboriginals down there, and he relayed a story of a family that used to live in the Pilliga, an Aboriginal family. And the mother, so I think there was five children, and she said that she had six children and she had to give one back.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yep. Yes, yeah, that is very, very interesting. And when you have a look at the paintings that young girl did and on display at the Narrabri Hospital, it seems that the Yowie is integral in the lives of the Aboriginals there. Absolutely integral. I have no doubt. Now, the other one is this same guy. He relayed his own story. And that was, he was in a creek system, and there's a lot of them, so I can't give you an exact location. But he was in there just foraging, a bit of bush tucker. And this is the only bunyip encounter I've ever heard of. And, he came across a bunyip. He saw it at a distance. It absolutely terrified him. He was adamant it wasn't a Yowie. He said this creature was made up of all different kinds of animals.
Yep, that sounds exactly like a bunyip. And I've only ever heard one other person with a bunyip encounter, and they won't come on the podcast.
No. Oh, mate, it terrified this young fella enough. He refused to ever go back into that general area again. He just terrified him. So in the end, yeah, we ended up with the bunyip story as well.
Mate, I'm going to have a chat with you off the air about that one, because bunyip stories are so uniquely Australian. Like, there's nothing else like that out there.
Yeah, and at the connection with water.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. But yeah, so that now... So that was Pilliga 2021. We planned a trip for Pilliga 2022, same time, May, and the floods. We gathered up at Coonabarabin up in one of the national parks there, And I think we might have even been lucky to get 24 hours of sunlight. And then basically the floods chased us all the way back to Brisbane. And we were in position to get into the Pilliga, but unfortunately the floods caused us to evacuate very quickly. And so we get to Pilliga 2023. I'll have a yarn to you about that, mate. And we might utilise the Believe podcast and see if we get some interested but serious campers involved.
Absolutely, mate. I think you'll find an army of them out there, to be honest.
Well, I hope so.
Mate, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you there tonight, Rod. Your weekend, I guess your extended stay at the Pilliga is quite a interesting one, and I think one that a lot of people would envy. And mate, I can't wait to get you on the podcast again, because you also have a super super fascinating UFO encounter story that you shared the other night on our live show that I'd love for you to come and share to the the main show. So mate, this is an invite for you to come back, and I'll have you back anytime.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure, Gabe. And I think, as I said earlier, it's all about location, timing, utilise the resources that are there. My hat goes off to the AYR guys and Sarah. That's basically how I based my... First locales, you know, we're straight off their sites, and Springbrook. I haven't had that much luck at Springbrook itself, but definitely Witherin. It's an amazing place as well, but so many encounters. But yeah, that just footsteps in the dark. Amazing. But I'm certain we'll talk again, mate.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Believe Paranormal and UFO podcast. If you have had an encounter and you would like to share it, please get in touch with me. My email address is believepod@gmail.com. Finally, don't forget to follow us on all our social media outlets and be sure to join our Discord server to talk to other listeners of the show. You'll find all these links in our show notes. Thank you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.